Bocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Bocelli.
May 16, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Anyway, Tuesday, second broadcast day of the week for the network. Now, yesterday we did not get a Get Mad with Chris Graves, but look, things happen. He had a guest call things off. That's just been the coin of the realm lately. Guests not showing up, having problems scheduling. And not him. I mean me, really. But for some reason it's spread to Chris, so he will be back tomorrow, I believe, with something of interest, I'm sure. And you never know what direction he's going to come from. Anyhow, in the meantime, I'm coming back around and bringing things to the table as fast as I can. Yesterday's podcast only released so far on the regular podcatchers. I haven't put it up on the website, but thought it was an interesting discussion with Mike Wallach. So anyway, if you're catching this through the various feeds, I mean, you don't care. Yesterday, today, another day, you can put them out of order because you could be listening anytime. But as I speak to you, we are just about 6 minutes after 8 p.m. Eastern, okay, in what they used to call the United States on Tuesday, the 16th day of May, 2023. All right, with all that in mind, you know, last week I got a lot of feedback from a reappearance, if you will, of an old friend. And what I heard was, man, am I glad to hear Pierce Redmond back. Because we hadn't heard from Porkins in a while. And you guys are an interesting combination when you get together. It's an interesting team effort. I agree. So therefore, Pierce Redmond is back with me. Of course, Porkins Policy. Porkins Policy Review, all of that, long-standing podcast. However, not seriously active lately. I have this idea that maybe Pierce is going to be a little more active soon. Not sure, because life always gets in the way, as we well know. But, hey, you never can tell. Is that in the works, Pierce, as I get into couple of odd things? And by the way, we're going to talk a little bit about the swag program that we're going to be running, the campaign, if you will, for Bocelli.com, because Pierce played a serious role in it the last time we did it, so maybe we'll recruit him to do so again. Pierce.
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, I would say I've been more active in the past, you know, today included, than I have in, you know, I finally posted our the episode we did. Was this last week or 2 weeks ago now? I can't even...
I'm not sure. It was either last week or the week before.
Yeah, but I just got around to posting it today onto my website. And, I mean, it's been a while since I posted anything. I want to say, I'm just scrolling back, the last thing I posted was 2021.
Wow.
And that was me and you talking about, I think it was... some JFK documents, South Park, or something, or, you know, so it was a while ago.
Who knows? Yeah, the last thing that I posted, I titled it Cyber Beating Dead Horses, which
yes.
Is a reference to the trouble I got into with Jeffrey Epstein on YouTube. And I posted that on the 3rd, so, yeah, I guess that's about 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks ago. So, okay, good enough and odd that the last thing you posted on your website before that was a couple of years back already, 2021.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, though, I might be wrong, but I think we might have, like, recorded some stuff in between them, but I just
somewhere
didn't post it.
Well, I always love to get your take on various things in Global Politico, if you will, because you always have a fascinating view on it. Your analysis is always interesting. That's for sure. Now, if you guys look at the graphic from the last show and every show that I put out with Pierce on it, I always have this thing where he's posing with the Bocelli.com hat. And that, along with your with that piece of artwork that I think was, what was that, a fan piece of artwork at some point?
Oh, no,
right?
That was my sister, Emma.
Oh, it was your sister who did it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right. Now it does come back to me. Your sister did this.
There's another logo that I was using for a while that Aaron designed.
Right.
And that's the other Porkins Policy logo.
Oh, is that the one that we adapted into the show template? The
yeah,
orange?
Probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. With like the I'm trying to find it now. I'm sure I could, but you know, if you look it up, people will be able to find it.
Yeah, it's around somewhere. It was like this very orange, had a very heavy
yes.
orange.
Yeah,
tone
yeah,
to
very
it.
Heavy orange, sort of like a cityscape, I think.
Right. No, but the one that I'm talking about is the one where he's outfitted very much like the Porkins character in Star Wars, with the helmet on and the orange suit. Suggestive, not really even. You know, you're probably not going to be in trouble for, like, intellectual properties or whatever. I had a recent issue with that, trying to get playing cards made for the show.
Mm.
Where, because I have an homage to a Godfather graphic that I've been using
lately.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
You know, I have that. And also, there's me sort of as a South Park character that I was using. And apparently both of these things infringe upon the intellectual properties, according to American manufacturers. You take it over to China, they don't give a crap. They'll print anything. So some of the new swag coming up. Now, the reason why I brought up the hat is just because we're going to reinstitute the hat program over here. Except you're not going to be able to get the original design, the one that Pierce is modeling in that picture. That design is no more, but the newer designs, in fact, there's only going to be one or two of a kind in the first run of the hats. Not only that, but we're going to have a hat design for each of the shows on the network, approved by the artist and the podcasters, that you'll get as a thank you for supporting the network. So we're going to come back around with it. Now, last time it was $30, but inflation since 2021, okay? guess what? It's $50, and you get a hat plus. So there'll be a hat plus either a very nice metal fountain pen or maybe a mouse pad, depending on what it is you want to put in. I'm going to select your added extra items because they're all in limited run. There's only a couple of these things made, a piece, and each of the hats are individual, all of them slightly different. Although they have the different logos, one of them has the Syndicate logo. One of them has a logo similar to the web page, you know, the website's header, which is the same kind that Pierce has, but the hat is very different. Some of them are trucker hats, some of them are padded, some of them are snapback, etc. They're all a little different because I've had to run through various manufacturers now. And almost none of them printed in America because of costs, okay? So they're printed all over Asia, everywhere from Singapore to China directly. I've had these things sampled, and now we have an inventory building of a bunch of these hats. So support any show you want, and, beginning at chipping in at $50. And that's the way it's going to go, and there are shirts. There are hats, there are mouse pads, there are very few sets of playing cards that are actually specialized and in limited run. So there's a bunch of things that could be in your little grab bag, depending on the level. Also,
new pens,
yeah, the new metal pens and maybe the plastic ones. I haven't ordered plastic ones in a while. Pierce likes the plastic ones, by the way. Yeah. And I do have a handful of them just put aside for you, the last ones.
Some sweatshirts, too?
Yeah, there's sweatshirts, all kinds of stuff I'm making that you'll have randomly inserted along with your thank you gift. So, honestly, $50, not a bad starting level, and you'll get stuff for it. So, there you go. There's also going to be printed Aces of Spades that have the network logo on them as well. Bunch of stuff like that are going to go into everybody's packages, and everybody's package will be different. So there you go. A unique swag bag, if you will. And some of them might actually be in swag bags that have logos on them that you'll be able to use for grocery shopping or whatever. You know, when you go in and get your bag discount for using your recycled bag, well, we got some Ocelli bags coming. So, bunch of stuff like that, and that's what's going to happen over the next couple of months. Anyway, now that I've done a massive, large plug for the show, back to it. Pierce started this whole thing, though, because I want you guys, when you get your hats, when you get your stuff, send me pictures. And we're going to distribute them on the Instagram and the Twitters of the show hosts. If you get a Get Mad hat or whatever. If you get Age of Transitions hat or an Uncle hat, show us your hat, wear your hat, take a picture of yourself, whatever. Put it on your stuffed animals, put it on your kids, your dogs. Whatever you want to do, just send us pictures, and we're going to circulate them as part of the ads continuing forward to promote supporting the network. So, and we did that last time, and we started with Pierce. Like, he got a hat, and we used him as the model and then built off it. You remember that, the little collages with everybody's hats?
Yes. No, indeed.
So we're doing that. That is back as of now. So, hopefully there'll be a whole web page devoted to it and all that, and some other goodies are going to come up later in the year. But there you go. So we're not going to go to selling merch exactly. We're going to go to giving you thank you gifts for chipping in, supporting, and keeping us live. So that's the way it's going to go. All right, all of that aside, let's get back to business, because as I said, I really missed your analysis on a great many things, and I'm curious what you're paying attention to while you're not strictly having to create new content constantly. What is catching your attention lately? I mean, is it the circus that is the Biden administration? Are you into, oh, you got the new report, right? What is that? The Durham report came out. So you must be interested in that,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, it's just really, that's my, you know, bedtime reading. No, I've been, I've probably ignored the Biden presidency more than any other presidency, probably aside from when I was like a child and truly didn't have to care. So that has not been like a top priority for me in terms of news consumption. I was rattling off a few of the stories and stuff I thought we could touch on. I'll just briefly say one thing that I as much as I have stepped away from the Epstein stuff, I will always take the time every couple of months to just Google his name and just see what's in the news. But something that caught my eye yesterday was a headline. This one in particular is from the Guardian, and I'll drop it in the chat as well if anyone is there. But this one did catch my eye, and it's Elon Musk subpoenaed over J.P. Morgan's role in Jeffrey Epstein's activities.
hang on a second, because I love this, because Elon Musk, while you were sort of away, Pierce, Elon Musk became an even more divisive figure. Now, I know I had been playing around with the guy Artisan Loaf that was on Aaron's show, mm-hmm. and we were doing little reports on what Elon Musk is up to and SpaceX and what the hell with the electric car, et cetera, right? He became a serious figure of interest kind of while you were away, buying Twitter for the outrageous price and all that. And now this week, big announcement, right? He's got a new CEO that he's going to put in charge.
Yes.
Because he's going to be
former executive at NBC.
Right, former executive at NBC, and somebody who's going to actually handle the day-to-day at Twitter, because he's dropping into another prominent role there, I guess, as the, what is it, technology director or something?
Something to that effect. I mean, it seems like he, it's also all these reports of, he wants to be very hands-off, but he is, so obsessed with micromanaging everything. I saw some headline about, he wants to approve anyone and everyone that's hired at his companies right now, I mean, which is an insane thing if you think about how large some of these companies he owns and the vast amount of people that are probably hired and fired on a daily basis for him to...
Yeah, and billionaires getting this involved in the micromanagement of anything, whether it's Twitter or otherwise, is kind of strange, because usually these are the guys that are hands-off, stand back, and, when stuff goes to court, it's almost always, listen, I had no idea what was going on, day-to-day operations. I'm the head of the company. How would I know what's going on? And that's usually the standard fare. But what's weird to me with Musk is that he became this either a villain or a hero to many people all of a sudden, right? I mean, the guy was hosting Saturday Night Live. I know that's not quite the pop culture, piece of street cred that it used to be, but still, He shows up to host Saturday Night Live. He's a big deal. Everybody's talking about him.
It is, though. I mean,
well, still, it still carries some gravitas, right? But it's not exactly the thing it once was. But what's weird to me is this. The strangeness with which we have to survive now, the alleged alt media deciding that certain people are either heroes or villains alongside of what the MSM does. Now, I gotta tell you, we could get into Tucker Carlson if we have enough time, but I'm only gonna take an hour with you today. Okay, so I don't know if we're gonna get there. But, I mean, Tucker Carlson, right, being embraced by the alleged alt media, who is ready, set, go for the right wing. You know, sitting there, and now he's going to come out and he's going to be on Twitter and do exactly what I said he would do, which was begin to invade independent media space, right? He's not signing a contract. He's not going to do the, you know, start up a website and Bill O'Reilly route of the no spin news. He's coming out and he's going to invade independent media's territory by coming out with a no frills. Here I am. I'm presenting something on Twitter, allegedly. And Elon Which Musk not, gets involved
is there
in
any,
that.
Is there, sorry to interrupt you, Chuck, but yeah. Is there any sense of what that will even look like?
Well,
because
no.
Is it just him going to be tweeting constantly? Is it, you know, like, I don't understand.
Well, no, because here's the thing. Twitter is morphing into something else with the Twitter spaces and
the
with,
spaces. I just saw that today.
Yeah.
I saw Elon Musk being interviewed today on it, or heard him, I guess.
Right. Well, but what it is that a lot of podcasters now also have the option to broadcast live or to share their podcast through Twitter. See, Twitter is morphing into something else where it's becoming not just a social media platform, but a media platform, right? So a lot of indie media people and alt media people, allegedly, are putting their stuff out either primarily through Twitter or as part of their array in the many places that they broadcast, right? So this is turning into something else. I mean, sort of like Facebook Live, except successful. You know, it's actually working. People are tuning in. That Facebook Live thing, as, you know, good of an idea as it seemed to have been, didn't catch on because, you know, Grandpa can't figure it out. But Twitter's a little more for younger people. So independent media people have been embracing it, using it as a platform, going out with their video podcasts, first run or live. And there is no contract required. You can do it basically for free. I mean, you know, they want you to pay for the blue check mark and all that, but nonetheless, you can do it for free. You could do it right now, Pierce. Just start running your podcast through Twitter. And then it comes up on people's feeds. Now, there's no contract. There's no agreement that I know of outside of your user agreement with Twitter. And Elon Musk even made that clear immediately after Tucker came out and made his declaration, right? Hey, I've been inside the mainstream media and I know the deception. So I'm here to tell you, you know, basically making his I'm an alternative media person case, pleading for it now on Twitter. He did an official announcement, but that means that he's going to be able to go out and do that. And Musk even came alongside of him to say, hey, look, he's not going to get any special treatment. He's like everybody else, selling it as now not only... I mean, now we're really looking at a town square because it's not only just the social media limited to so many characters, you know, text tweets, share your videos, make your podcast here. It's going to become a catch-all, and it's evolving. Now, all of that's going on, and yes, indeed, there are people saying that, you know, Musk, again, being embraced by the alternative, they're saying that Musk is one of these guys who is for free speech, who is actually on the right side of things, who is, you know, not going to allow it to fall into liberal media's hands like everything else. You know, it's not quite Truth Social, but it's going to be something new because of the vision of Elon Musk. And I find it very strange who they're embracing as a yet again another hero. Like I said, Tucker Carlson's a new hero, and he's going to go do his thing on Twitter now, which, by the way, probably doesn't violate any of his no-compete clauses. You know what I mean? Because Fox is still paying him, even though they've canceled his show. But if he goes on Twitter and does his thing, well, that's not really an agreement with a media company per se, because how do you classify Twitter at this point?
Right.
It's not, you know, it's not like you went to a competing network. He didn't go to CNBC. He didn't go to CNN, right? He didn't go to ABC, NBC, you know, the whole alphabet. He's going to Twitter to do his thing. So this is actually... something different. You could argue that it doesn't even violate any sort of competition clauses in his contracts or anything else, which I find interesting. But even stranger is he laid the groundwork, his cred, if you will. His street cred was being established with the whole, you know, JFK. Okay, the CIA was involved in JFK's murder. Good night, everybody. You know, and a couple other things. He said, you know, maybe we should question the vaccines. Good night, everybody. He laid that groundwork before getting dismissed by Fox, which allegedly was over these, you know, tweets coming out during the lawsuit there with Dominion, right? I find it very interesting that he's being embraced as a new hero among the, again, in quotes, alt media, indie media. And so is Tucker Carlson, when meanwhile, how do you get more establishment than Tucker Carlson? But anyway, so now your hero billionaire, yet another one, hey, maybe he should run for office. I don't know if that's coming, but who knows, right?
Oh, at some point, I'm sure that, yeah, you know, Trump is in many ways has sort of opened the door for that sort of celebrity businessman, you know.
Well, imagine this as an unstoppable team. How about Trump and Musk, and it's a ticket, and you know what? You don't like me, Musk will be my vice president.
Right. Even though wasn't Musk was the one that sort of walked away from Trump early on, right?
Well, yeah, but alliances, look, loyalty doesn't really matter, does it?
No, of course not. And yeah. And I guess just to put it all into context, this, you know, Musk, the savior, is being subpoenaed by the U.S. Virgin Islands, because of, you know, that for information, I think relating to, you know, Epstein in particular, but that it is believed that Epstein may have referred or attempted to refer Elon Musk to J.P. Morgan as a client.
Oh.
And which in and of itself is maybe not the most, fascinating aspect. But it did just remind me of the fact that Elon Musk's brother, Kimball Musk, was apparently dating a woman for a year. And that was introduced to him by Jeffrey Epstein. There are the pictures of Ghislaine Maxwell and Elon Musk at parties, which you know, Musk claims she just photobombed. There's his ex-wife Tallulah Riley talking about going over to Epstein's house. Rumors that Epstein had a, you know, private tour of SpaceX. So you know, it's just one of those. It piqued my interest. I know that last time I was on, we were talking about, you know, what's the big story going to be? And there were a lot of people, you know, they keep talking about this. There's going to be this big bombshell. And I don't know that this is.
Oh, I don't think this is it. No.
No, I don't think so either. But there, I mean, it's, I think it's, I don't think that, yeah, that it's going to be like, oh, Musk and him are close. But I think that a bombshell could just be, or a small bombshell is just that, again, this guy is connected to everyone. Even these supposed heroes, you know, Elon Musk fighting against, you know, globalist tyranny and, uh-huh. You know, all this other stuff. And he's hanging out with Epstein. He's, well, you know, I mean, so it's just, it was just sort of like another funny thing. You know, this idea that you really think this person is kind of above it all.
Okay, what I find stunning, and you know me, I love to just, you know, throw us into the fire as soon as the frying pan comes out, right? Let's just do it. Here's the thing. You and I have known each other for years, all right? And I am not recommending you to a bank to do stuff. I mean, look, if you asked me to, I mean, I might vouch for you if you wanted to put me down on your application for an apartment, and you might do the same for me, but it would be a discussion. And you and I have known each other for years. So, right. You know, what kind of relationship does that imply if he's, like, giving his recommends to a bank?
I'm unclear as to,
hey, maybe I'm
what,
crazy,
you know, what, you know, how this even works. Like, I don't know, is Elon Musk, is it officially known that he is a client of JP Morgan? As a client of JP Morgan, I mean, this is, I would assume this is as a private individual, this is not, mm-hmm. You know, they're not managing his money, they're not managing the company, they're managing Elon Musk's money.
Right.
So yeah, I'd be interested to know if anyone does know. You know, let us let us know.
Well, it's such a broad. Well, see, but that's the thing. It's such a broad based declaration, right? Are we talking about his private money? Are we talking about his side projects? Are we talking about the very complex, area, the world of loans? Because remember, when he bought Twitter for, what was it? I mean, how many billions of dollars?
40-something billion.
$40 billion or whatever. It's not all his money. So he had to get money from somewhere. I mean, the bank at some point gets involved there if you're funneling investment money of that size. I mean, you can't do it, you know, by yourself going and collecting checks door to door. You know what I'm saying? So what are we talking about? Are we talking about them helping or being involved with that? Or do we know that the guy even has a bank account with them? I mean, do we know any of that? And if so, what does this mean? I mean, it's open questions, unless I'm wrong. What do you think?
Oh, no, yeah, I haven't the foggiest idea. I think it's just more indicative of the story as it continues to sort of very slowly unravel with Epstein. That, you know, I mean, it's even this, it's unclear as to what are they really looking for. You know, is the government of the Virgin Islands simply on a, you know, to quote like Law and Order, a fishing expedition? You know, I don't know. I'm not sure what exactly they are trying. I think what they're really trying to do is just get more information.
Well, does it have anything to do with the standing lawsuit? Because there was supposed to be.
Oh, it does. Yeah, yeah. This is all part of the Virgin Islands. Lawsuit involving Epstein, involving money that's owed,
the victims,
and the connection between J.P. Morgan and the notion that J.P. Morgan was covering for him.
All connected to the victims who are seeking some sort of restitution from his estate via the things that are held in the Virgin Islands. Then, right?
I believe so. I think that is ultimately what this is all stemming from. and this is why, you know, the Virgin Islands has been very aggressive in subpoenaing lots of people, lots of very rich people, wealthy bankers and mm-hmm. people, in that sort of world, along with apparently Elon Musk.
Well, and one wonders if this is a massive signal to those that have used it as the quiet little shelter, you know, to hide monies for various reasons. Is this a signal now, hey, look, the party's over in the Virgin Islands? Because that's what seems to have happened every time one of these lawsuits, you know, starts shedding light on stuff like this, right? Is all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, can't go to that little tax shelter anymore, can't go to that place where the U.S. government doesn't look anymore, because they're going to start making things public, right? I mean, we've seen this repeatedly with these different, especially island nations, it seems like to me, maybe I'm wrong, that, you know, become these havens for laundering money. I mean, let's just be blunt, whether it's Russian oligarchs or it's, you know, the billionaire class or it's, you know, the various guys who have been involved in different schemes, Ponzi schemes and whatnot, or it's the crypto guy. Oh, by the way, what's going on with the crypto guy? Anybody check in on that lately? Last crypto guy?
Sam Fried, whatever.
Yeah, Sam Friedman. I'm just asking. I'm not asking you, Pierce, per se. I'm just throwing things out here. I'm just saying, is that a signal, though, to the others that might be seeking to launder their money there or what? You know, I mean, what does this mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. At the end of the day, probably nothing. You know, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. I didn't really think that this was, I mean, it is not particularly interesting, and I don't think it's, like I said, this is not going to be the bombshell that we're all, waiting for. I think it just proves how pervasive Epstein his influence and, you know, his reach with pretty much everybody. You know, again, even someone like Elon Musk, who in at least in public he comes off as this, he's so smart, he's ahead of the curve on everything. He's warning us about, you know, Skynet taking over and, you know, AI, and we've got to colonize Mars and all these stuff. But yet he's still hanging out with this social pariah, Jeffrey Epstein, and he's possibly taking financial advice from him, you know, and getting recommended to one of the most powerful, influential banks in the world.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it just goes to prove that, you know, even I think with all of the pressure on him, unlike other people that have fallen out of favor for even similar stuff to Epstein, apparently his influence was still such that people were willing to kind of just completely look past that.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go the way of Kevin Spacey, where, you know, instantaneously his career was over and nobody would talk to him anymore. You know, and that was based on allegations that, by the way, eventually sort of evaporated. And still, that guy's career never recovered. Okay, yeah. None of that's ever going to recover. People stop talking to him. I mean, you know, I think people are more forgiving of what's his name there, the guy who ran the film company,
Weinstein.
Why? I think people are more forgiving of Weinstein, who's in prison.
He's been convicted.
You know, really, you know, where they're like, well, look, you know, I mean, it was a time we worked with the movie company. What do you want us to do? But, you know, Kevin Spacey, nope. You know, it's sort of like Al Franken.
I think that's also because he was so much more beloved. You know, I don't think anybody was like, oh, I just love Harvey Weinstein. You know, they might find him interesting or something, but...
No, but they loved his product, his movies.
Yeah, that is true. But I don't think that anyone had, like, the same... You know, it's like you watch The Usual Suspects for the first time, and you're just... You're blown away. You can't believe, oh, my God, Kevin Spacey is so great. And then to find out that he might be this creepy predator...
Right.
Who, I mean, seems to have been very close with Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell and whatnot. So, yeah, I think that's just – it's like a hard pill to swallow. I think in the same way that a lot of – you know, even people like Woody Allen, people have real trouble, you know, coming to terms with that. And that results in him being completely canceled. I don't want to talk about him. Don't tell me about his movies. I don't want anything – I don't want to know anything about him. You know, he's evil. That's the end of it.
Yeah, but Woody Allen, is he again? Woody Allen is again almost forgot. I mean, they literally knocked House of Cards right out of Kevin Spacey's hands when it was responsible for really setting up the future of streaming services and original content. I mean, without it, I don't think we would have ever seen the CBS All Access and, you know, and things like this even attempted. Had there not been a serious a showing there that original content could be generated by one of these streaming services, and it could not only compete with but defeat, you know, a lot of these other, you know, television networks and things. And Kevin Spacey was integral to that, and they knocked it out of his hands, took him out of the show. You know, seriously considered removing it. I think it's still up on Netflix, but seriously considered, I mean, totally removed the show, turned it over to Robin Wright, right?
Yeah.
For her to run, and ran it, she did, straight into the ground. You know, and I almost think that was done on purpose, too, to completely eliminate the need for any sort of legacy where it's like, oh, well, at least he still had this great piece of work going. It was all taken away with his cancellation. You know, sort of like Al Franken, with his situation, other politicians surviving. The one guy, that's another guy. I was wondering if you had any comments on
on who, on
the guy who has just now been drawn into court and is actually being put on trial now for all these things down in South America. You know, I'm talking about the congressman from New York.
Oh, Santos?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I love him. I can't get enough. I mean, I hope he does go away. But I at the same time, I hope he doesn't. I encourage the listeners to go to his, especially if you're from New York, to go to his Twitter account. There's a video that he posted on like opening day of baseball, and it is. I mean, cringe isn't even like a word that would qualify as a descriptive for this video he did in support of his so-called beloved Mets. I don't think this guy's ever been to a Mets game. I don't know that he knew the Mets existed until this moment that he posted this video. And then I say I'm not like a Mets fan at all. I was, you know, always a Yankees fan growing up, but it is so offensive, and it's just such a ridiculous thing. But no, I. Yeah. Oh, I love
Santos. I only bring him up because amazing. He is such an amazing contrast to Al Franken, who had to be removed, right? Had to resign.
For really, like, a stupid, crude thing that, you know, doesn't look good. I don't think it's something he should be proud of. But it was like, it is sort of a bit like, you know, he is a comedian. It was maybe distasteful. But Santos is, I mean, the fact that he was elected when everybody knew exactly what he, like, this is not like a shock.
No, and
to
it's
anybody.
Such a grab bag. I mean, between grifting, you know, between grifting a traumatized veteran over his rescue animal and, you know, being a drag queen apparently. And then also being, what was he? He was a Jew, and then he wasn't a Jew.
You should see them, some of the people, like, the sort of, like, you know, gay Twitter, they don't even think he's gay.
Yeah, well,
they think
that's
a grift, you know, that he's just making that up.
But the whole thing is so bizarre.
He was married
to a woman. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't stop the bizarre contradictions, and you would think the Republican Party would be like, yeah, we need to get this guy gone, because, I mean, the Democratic establishment was like, Al Franken's got to go.
Can you imagine if George Santos was a Democrat? I mean, he wouldn't – it just wouldn't have – and I don't say this to be, like, partisan. I just don't think it would have gotten that far.
You would not have, you know, Nancy Pelosi standing there like Kevin McCarthy did, going, well, look, he's not actually on any committees, and the people of New York elected him, so, you know, what do you want me to do about it?
She would have booted his ass out of there if he even made it that far, you know? I just – whatever you want to think about her, there's no way – I think actually the George Santos thing to me really illustrates how weak McCarthy is as a leader.
It's just so funny. I love his basic explanation, which boils down to, look, the people of New York elected him, so what do you want me to do about it? I mean, that's pretty much his, I mean, unless I'm wrong, I think that's...
No, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, he's with check fraud in Brazil.
I don't even have a list.
Payments haven't gone. I mean, it's like insane.
He's getting money from the guy. The horrible thing, he's collecting money for the veteran who wants to get his rescue dog, and then he doesn't give him the money. I mean, that was that guy came out, what the hell?
The one that got me, like, in terms of these 13 felonies that he's been, and this is only counting the United States. This is not counting the felonies, the check fraud and other stuff that, you know, his problems in Brazil. Which, who knows, maybe those will come back up. But the one that really got me was 3 counts of money laundering.
Yeah.
And I'm not – maybe you would know this better, Chuck, but because I couldn't quite figure it out initially. But, I mean, is this – because I know that he was depositing these, like – or strange – you know, it's like I forget what the number is. But there was – you know, there's a certain number if you're getting donations to a political campaign above a certain amount – you know, they have to be filed in a special way. And he was, whatever that amount was, it was like, you know, a dollar short of that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with some of these, my impression with the, at least with the, because money laundering to me seems weird for, you know, campaign finance, wire fraud, I get, you know, making false statements, all of that sort of stuff. But the money laundering, is that just like he's funneling money he's scamming people in Brazil, and then he's taking that money and then putting that into his campaign to wash it so that he, you know, and then use it obviously to buy whatever stupid crap he's doing. I mean, it's just so unbelievable.
Like,
it's the level to which he is so corrupt and he's just not very good at it either.
And I'm so familiar with various scams, you know, that, like, you know, mob guys pull off where it's like, okay, we're going to raise money for this, but we're actually going to put it over here and we're going to pretend it's for something else. I mean, you know, very much like the whole Trump thing with the cancer kids, where it was like, okay, well, I have to hire a place and I'm just going to hire my dad's place, you know, to hold my event. Things like I get all that kind of stuff where you bring somebody in who's kind of like, you know, already juiced in. All right, don't worry. I'm going to take care of you here. You're going to make a profit. Stuff like that. I don't understand some of the scams that he's got running because they don't make any sense.
I think he's Well, one, he's obviously a compulsive liar. Like, there's some sort of underlying psychological issue with him.
Yeah.
But, because, I mean, some of these things were, I mean, the one that got me was, like, he was claiming to be a producer for Spider-Man Out of the Dark, this idiotic musical.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like, why? Why are you lying about that? Like, what are you, you know, what is that he had employees at, like, the Pulse nightclub shooting? I mean, just, like, it runs the gamut mm-hmm. of just, like, just so bizarre and so varied in his lying that it just seems like he wakes up and I think he's unclear as to who he is and like what, you know, he's so bad as a confidence man that I don't know if he can even remember all of these like lies. I mean, that's why he's gotten caught out so many times.
But the thing is, but obviously it went on long enough that he could build up this track record because, I mean, this is a lot of stuff going on and you're running for office. I mean, look, kudos to somebody who can keep some plates spinning because there's a lot of crap going on and I can't even sort it out. I mean, it's just wild to me. And also that his own party, the only reason why I even bring him up is because, like I said, Al Franken, it was like everybody turned on him. This guy has, like, scandals going in 80 different directions. I mean, moral turpitude coming all, from every direction, right? Different scams, different people he's beaten out of money, okay? Different, again, all these different felony charges, all sorts of financial crimes he's committing. You know, the obvious thing when you bring, you know, $999,000 somewhere, you know, just so that you don't get to that, you know, that one more dollar or whatever it is. I mean, all that stuff is going on and nobody is going, yeah, we need to ask him to resign. Nobody does that. But Al Franken, get him gone. I mean, it's just, I don't know. To me, that's just the weirdest thing to watch happen. But anyhow, look, that's not even the biggest point that I want, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this. I just wanted to point it out that this is the world in which we live. And meanwhile, I know that some other stuff caught your attention. I want to get to it because we've already run through so much time on this.
Well, George Santos is, I mean, you can't. I'm glad you brought him up, just because I don't really talk about him much,
sort
of daily life. But it is, he's just so fantastic.
It's a wonder it's like one of those things that's like very much. I mean, the old standby, right? It's the car wreck. You can't turn your head away, even though you really don't want to be watching it. That's what's happening there. But meanwhile, you know, people have also brought up stuff about 9/11 to me recently. And it's very strange, you know, the world we find ourselves in there regarding the 9/11 truth community and what has happened to it in recent years, especially. But there's still stuff going on regarding this, and I know that some stuff caught your attention, and I don't think anybody is bothering to look at recent events regarding 9/11. I mean, it's very much quiet on the on the truther front. I know, you know. Somebody like John Gold might take objection to me saying that, but the truth is, I haven't seen much discussion of it lately. It's not been in the hopper, so to speak, with the alt media or anything lately because they're too busy getting ready for the 2024 circus event that's about to unfold and all that. But I know you've taken notice of some stuff recently, and tell us about that.
Well, yeah, I would, and I'm sure John would probably be annoyed with both of us, but it is true. I don't really think it's in the news very much. Although I just went on to John. I was just looking up John's Twitter account, 9/11 Justice Now.
Yeah,
and it does seem like he was talking about what I just discovered earlier today, but that a 21-page court document.
Well, big, huge shout-out. Look, big, huge shout-out to John Gold before you go any further. He's always on this stuff. He's always aware of what's going on. I love him for this because he has not ceased when it comes to this. And, of course, if you go to We Were Lied To About 9/11, I think that's the name of his website, right? We Were Lied To About 9/11.com.
Yes.
And or if you follow him on Twitter, either way, you can stay abreast of what's actually happening regarding the search for truth regarding 9/11. He's practically the only guy who is absolutely, it seems like, 24/7 on it. I love John. I got to get him back on the show again soon. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure we dropped that.
Oh, yeah, no, always. Yeah, I mean, John, like you said, I mean, he's just devoted his, like, life to it.
Oh, yeah, and his books are there for free, by the way, on his website. He's not trying to sell you anything. He is just, you know, after the truth, number one, and number two, some level of justice would be nice to see, too, and there's a lot of different ways to go with that. I mean, and he's focused on the families, the people that are still suffering all these years afterwards, the people that have died as a result, not just from the events of that day, but, you know, from the aftermath. So, yeah, absolutely, I would recommend people look at John Gold and look him up. If you never heard of him, please just pause this podcast and go look up John Gold, J-O-N, and then Gold, G-O-L-D.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry,
and
go ahead.
You, his website is We Were Lied To About 911.com.
That's it. We Were Lied To About 911.com. Yep.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, you can find, I think John still has a lot of his interviews. He did a really in-depth podcast series for a while, interviewing all sorts of different people. But he has, it's for free, you can download it. A book version of every single interview he did,
right?
On his website,
great stuff. Look for him on YouTube as well. A lot of his great interviews are still up on YouTube. He hasn't been banned. It's really an amazing resource.
Well, he hasn't been banned because nothing he says is, you know, he's very, I wouldn't say cautious, but he's not you know, like, speaking out of, you know, his ass about the, you know, I mean,
it's fact very based.
It's factual. Yeah. Nothing he's saying is incorrect.
Right. Fact based, not, you know, speculation, very, very limited.
Yeah.
Very direct evidence, actually talks to the real people, talks to the people that were affected, and lets them speak for themselves. And how the hell are you going to ban that?
Yeah.
So he does not get banned on YouTube, which is really great. Anyway, I'm just saying, big, huge tip of as many hats as I got to John Gold. So go ahead and talk about what it is that caught your attention that he's on.
It was something that caught my eye, which is, and it's funny, I was like looking it up, and, you know, I saw it was like in the gray zone. I saw it there listed somewhere, and, you know, bombshell filing, 9/11 hijackers or CIA recruits.
Mm.
And then you find out, well, the gray zone didn't even, it's not even their story. It's actually, it was written by, or it was published in Spy Talk, which is actually kind of an interesting, it's a Substack. People should check it out, spytalk.co. But, you know, they were reporting on some recently declassified court filings, in particular a 21-page court document, and I'm quoting from Spy Talk, filed in 2021 at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba, where the cases of the 9/11 defendants are being heard. The document was on the public docket, but went unreported because it was completely redacted except for an unclassified marking. Spy Talk obtained an unredacted copy. Mm. And nothing in it is all that new. It was compiled by this guy, Don Canestaro, who was investigator for the Office of Military Commissions. But it and again, you know, John Gold is tweeting about how this isn't really news. I saw, you know, my friends Ray Novoselsky and John Duffy, who wrote The Watchdogs Didn't Bark, and who also were the people behind the probably one of the best podcasts or early podcasts, you know, series called Who Is Rich Blee. They wrote about this a lot in their book. But it basically just it just lends more credence to the idea,
right,
or the theory put out by many people, that Al-Hamzi and Al-Madar, who were two of the 9/11 hijackers, they were on the plane that crashed into the Pentagon. They are also famous for their sort of escapades in Malaysia. They were at this very famous Al-Qaeda summit, where they were, you know, videotaped coming and going by the CIA, but who, you know, neglected to bug it for audio. And they were also famous for their comings and goings in San Diego, and their meeting with a character, Bayoumi, who who was, there's no doubt about that, was a Saudi intelligence officer. But it just, it's maybe not the most interesting story if you're familiar with this, but it just is, there's just further evidence compiled by other people that these guys were definitely, you know, connected to Saudi intelligence. But it also puts forward the position that the CIA might have, in fact, truly been able, been trying to recruit them, you know, and that they were working through Saudi intelligence. And it just quotes more people, and it kind of lends a little bit more credence to that. What I found interesting, one, is that it just sort of goes unreported, and then it kind of gets, like, you know, reported, you know, in the gray zone as this, like, bombshell. And it's not really a bombshell. All of this was well known. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's nothing in this that you haven't heard. And, you know, even combing through the Spy Talk article, you see that a lot of these, you know, there are different people, different FBI agents and stuff that are referred to, you know, as not even pseudonyms, it's CS3, CS4. And, you know, you're able to kind of figure out exactly who these people are. And they've been on the record before. They've talked about this openly that, yeah, that, you know, there were all these rumors flying around that, you know, the CIA was out there and they're trying to recruit Al-Qaeda operatives. They knew more. There's a lot about Alex Station. Again, all stuff that John Duffy, Ray Novoselsky, John Gold, and others have talked ad nauseum about.
Right.
But it was just what caught my eye about it, Chuck, was one is just that, you know, it's like further, you know, there's just every couple of years there's more and more and more evidence that at the very least the Saudis knew exactly what was going on. They were running all these people, and that, you know, best case scenario, the CIA was 110% aware of this and just, you know, allowed this to all happen. And if you really start to kind of peel it back, that they were obviously involved as well. But the thing that I found so interesting about it, what piqued it, is one is that it you know, it's like bombshell filing. Nobody, you know, this was not like a big headline for, I mean, maybe people on Gray Zone saw it, but it definitely kind of flew under the radar. And it's interesting that it still has this like resonant power to kind of, you know, to come out and people get kind of interested in it, and then it goes away. Right. You know, and I don't know, there's just something about that. And also just, you know, in terms of stuff like, you know, I was perusing the Spy Talk website after that, and I saw, you know, Jefferson Morley writes articles for them, and, you know, and I know, you know, obviously, you know, with the JFK stuff, you know, becomes ever more relevant, and it kind of, you know, people kind of tease out this stuff, and I'm sure you get this a lot, where it's sort of like, it's kind of more of the same. But it's interesting that it still has that power, and that to an extent in the alt media, it can kind of be trotted out as this thing, and people can kind of look at it, and people can kind of talk about it as if it's some brand new bombshell. When it's just the same piece of information packaged over and over again. And I think the sad thing is that it gets reported on as this, you know, brand new breaking news story, and then it's just filed away, and then that's it. And there's no real kind of one that all this stuff was out there. The fact that this is all out there and that we still haven't done anything, that these guys are still just sort of out there operating, doing whatever, that none of these people have really been held accountable, even though every couple of years the same story comes out.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, just this week, right, you'll be amazed to hear this. You talk about Morley, and Morley is well aware of this. Just this week, more documents were actually released, more CIA documents that, again, lead us to the idea, anyway, that, you know, that Lee Harvey Oswald had people that were connected to the CIA directly involved in his life. You know, and it's like, and ho-hum, nobody reported on this, and I do mean nobody. And there it is. You know, here we go, a little more incremental confirmation over what's going on. Now, does that mean the CIA was directly, you know, is it the grand declaration that we got from, you know, Tucker Carlson? Hey, the CIA was involved. Good night, everybody. You know, giving you no facts, no nothing to back it up at all. just giving you sort of an agreement with some sort of confirmation bias. Yes, true, but at the same time, even when this evidence does come out, it's never given any attention. Even the people that you would think should be paying attention to it don't want to hear about it. You know, no, nobody wants to hear about this stuff. I mean, we still have... anyway, it's just the way it's going to be. And Morley, I appreciate what he's doing. I really do. He's got a thing over there, I think, The Tale of Two Defectors, and, you know, trying to compare and contrast what went on with Oswald with another well-known defector. And he makes good points, but these are things that have been around for a while. Nobody's really going to pay attention unless you're an avid follower of, you know, Morley's Substack or something. You're not even going to know about this stuff. I mean,
did you see, I saw this because then I was looking at Morley's Substack, that there's a new JFK film that David Mamet has written. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I heard about it. No, there's a couple of them supposedly in the works, and some of them might get, you know, either they're going to run out the trailers, or they might run out of film that, you know, maybe has been produced that we didn't know about in progress right around the 60th anniversary, toward the end of this year. They're going to either drop new films, or they're going to try and get you, you know, psyched up for new film. And, yeah, there's all kinds of weird things going on in JFK land. And even people in JFK land don't want to hear about it. It's really weird. You know, it's like there's just what did we call that before? The oversaturation of information has caused people to become really just numb to a lot of this stuff. So, you know, incrementally you get confirmation on a whole bunch of things that, you know, were speculated about only a few years ago, that people had limited evidence to go on a few years ago. That a lot of people did some, you know, very serious work trying to get the information out there, and now it's just kind of lost in the sea. You know, it's really kind of a sad circumstance that we find ourselves in. And a lot of it being deactivated and derailed, in my mind, by these strange political characters who come out, make these brand, you know, these grandiose, brash statements. You know, like, oh, Donald Trump was telling the truth about the Iraq war during the campaign. Remember that? You know, it was like, oh, yeah, kind of. But, you know, but then it just sort of, I don't know, it's weird. It kind of derails the actual work that went into it. And does Donald Trump give you anything to work with so you can back that statement up? No. Does Tucker Carlson? No. You know, Elon Musk with his weird statements, does he give you stuff to back it up? No. And then even when he does, you know, the Twitter files, remember that was a big deal a little while ago? Interesting how, you know, maybe that's not so reliable anymore, right? Sort of everybody gets kneecapped at the end. it's a very weird, it's funny you bring up the usual suspects, because that's what I feel like. You know, at the end of it, the one guy who was actually responsible walks away, and you were talking to him the whole time, and you didn't know it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, it's the general feel I get from all of this anymore in the indie and alt media world. But what is the point of what I'm saying? You know what? I kind of don't even know anymore. That's really the point of it, is do you know what the point is anymore? You know? Like, it all gets lost in the sea. I don't know how else to put it, Piers. Maybe you can help me out here.
No, I agree, and I guess I don't know if I was if I made my point clear. I think I was sort of rambling with the 9/11 stuff, but it feels, you know, it feels like that too, that it's being reported here to just sort of to then get lost in all of it, because again, there's nothing actually like new in any of this,
right?
And I don't know what is the point of reporting on this. Other than it's like a little bit more confirmation from, you know, about a topic that was all but, you know, exhausted by people like John Duffy, Ray Novoselsky, John Gold, and others. And right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just odd to me. Exactly. It's like, what is the point? Why is this happening now? What are they trying to get out of this?
Well, they're certainly not trying to use it to distract us from the ridiculous circumstance we find ourselves in financially, as the financial crush continues to, punish the majority of us the way it seems. It's certainly not there to take us away or distract us from the ongoing conflicts on the planet, the fact that we're being divided and conquered repeatedly and subdivided and meant to be pitted against one another. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a significant enough distraction just yet. Almost seems like we're waiting for the next big bombshell to really drop. You know, what is the next big problem that we're going to have to face collectively? That's almost what it leaves me wondering, because at this point, I mean, you know, how numb do you have to get, you know, in order to stop caring about everything? I mean, it's like apathy is being enforced. You know, what was that statement? Oh man, I'm trying to think of the great Jellaby Opera line. You know, where it's like apathy is now enforced by law or something. You know, it's like it's like now it's just, it is the way of the legal construct. This is the way things will be conducted from now on. You know, and I think it's meant to sideline the people that really were intensely interested. You know, nothing new here, nothing to see here, folks. You've already seen it. And for those that don't know and didn't care, they don't see it either. It's just meant to be, you know, part of the background noise, the white noise of the world.
Yes.
You know, and it's hard to articulate what that really means. Where are we going next? I don't know, Pierce. If I knew, I would put it out there, though, and I'd sell it to somebody and warn them about what's coming next, because I don't feel good about it. But anyway, I've killed an hour with Pierce Redman. So... how do you feel about it, Pierce? Anything you want to drop in here before we get going? And by the way, feel free to post this as soon as you want to. I'll give you the, you know, obviously all permissions. Post it on PorkinsPolicyReview.com. That is the full website, right?
Yeah, PorkinsPolicyReview.com.
Okay. Yeah, trying to remember, because it's been a while since I've
been
saying
it. I know. I have to remember, too, sometimes. No, just to add, Chuck, that it's been great. Doing these again with you, and just as we were talking there, I was just in my head thinking of getting, you know, maybe getting John Gold, maybe inviting John Duffy back on to and interview him, maybe related to this, you know, brand new bombshell news article about 9/11, which was reported on years ago by both of them. Right. So yeah, I don't know. That's it. Just it's been good. Kind of, you know, easing back into recording stuff. So I hope that we'll do more of this in the near future.
Well, I'll tell you what, sometime in the next couple of weeks, maybe like beginning of June, somewhere in there, why don't we get together again? And if you want to invite some other guests along, we can have a bit of a roundtable discussion and let some people smarter than me anyway have the microphone for a minute. You know, I'm not going to claim they're smarter than you, but, you know, somebody like John or... You know, or the other John, you know, either Duffy or Gold or whoever it is that you want to bring on to comment on this stuff and really give us the state of the state regarding 9/11, regarding what this all means as we go forward, still forward into the post 9/11 reality, because it's still important. You know, it is still important stuff. And I think we need to pay attention to what's not being reported more than what it is they're laying out there as like, oh, here you go. Here's your bone, doggies. You know, chew on this for a little while, but don't worry. We don't need to feed you real food just yet. What are your thoughts?
No, absolutely. And, yeah, and I think, yeah, just if to for no other reason than to just sort of pose that question exactly. Why now? Why is this, you know, why is this even being reported? And then the fact that, you know, While it should be bigger news in the sense that it is more confirmation that the, you know, largest terrorist attack in America, you know, was known about by our closest allies, was known, you know, about by people involved in ostensibly preventing it.
Right.
You know, and the, I don't know, I know it's very, you know, it's much more in vogue to be concerned with, I don't know, Jeffrey Epstein or the alt media or Trump and DeSantis and, you know, and I don't know, the deep state and all this stuff. But I mean, you know, it's like if you're really interested in those, if the deep state and those sort of topics, I mean, you can't really get much deeper than 9/11.
Right.
You know, when it comes to this, I mean, outside of other, you know, deep state events such as JFK or Iran-Contra and things like that, but right. And they're still super important.
Exactly.
We're still living with all of the aftermath of those things. And if anything, these sort of articles that come out, they just sort of reinforce that, yeah, this is our life now.
Right.
You know, it's not trying to seek out new information. It's not trying to contextualize it or to understand it. It's just sort of more confirmation that, yeah, you know, every time you get on a subway in New York City, there's an announcement that police can just search you for no reason,
right.
Which is all which is only was instituted after 9/11.
Yes, but if you are
completely ludicrous,
right.
Law that still exists all over New York City.
Exactly, but don't forget, you know, if you're a whistleblower regarding the Hunter Biden laptop, though, you might get removed because that happened this week too. You know, just saying. Look, there are many systems of justice, and they're not serving any of us, and that's the way it is. And the key thing to remember when it comes to 9/11, as far as I'm concerned, is exactly what John Gold's website and book says. We were lied to about 9/11, and then that dot really should be a period. But we were lied to about 9/11.com is John Gold's website. Porkin's Policy Review is Piers Redmond's website. Go there, check out his stuff, check out his old stuff, and we're going to talk more with Pierce in the future. The Ocelli Effect is done. No matter who you are, where you are, when you are, remember, I'm merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination looked into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
This is James Corbett of Corbett Report. And you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.